Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, Mark here. Just wanted to let you know that we recorded this episode before it was announced that Everton have been deducted 2 points for a second breach of Premier League financial rules. So keep that in mind when we chat about relegation candidates. Thanks and enjoy the podcast.
Hello, I'm Mark Schwarter and welcome to the Optusport Football Podcast. I'm joined today by Thomas Sorensen and, as always, Phil Kitchmalidis. Now, Phil, no La Liga this weekend. It was great to see Athletic Club Bilbao win the Copa del Rey. How big is it? How big is it for Bilbao?
Oh, absolutely huge. They beat Mallorca, so they were big favourites to do it. There is actually a bit of controversy because they say they've won 25 and everybody else says there's won 24. There's a bit of controversy about one of the earlier ones at the start of the 20th century. But yeah, let's stick with the official line, which is 24. And it was great to see them win. This is absolutely huge for a huge club. Now, I know a lot of our listeners may know, but they may not know about the special selection policy that Athletic Club implement. Only players who have been born in the Basque country or come through a Basque youth academy can play for Athletic Club. It's a special club and their slogan is unique in the world. And they are unique. It is a unique club. And to be able to achieve success with this very, very specific selection policy is really quite extraordinary. They're going to have the celebrations in Bilbao on Thursday. They're going to take out what's known as the Gabarra, which is a little boat that all the players go out down the middle of the river. It hasn't been out for 40 years and everybody's been talking about the Gabarra. I think the Gabarra is going to need a little lick of paint and a little once over of the motor to make sure it's still okay. But yeah, it's going to be a special day of celebration. And it was an incredible night for Athletic Club and they've done it.
I mean, I suppose, put it in perspective, the way you can compare it though, Thomas, is Newcastle, Sunderland, Middlesbrough. So they all went, right, we're not taking any players other than are born in our area. I mean, Middlesbrough tried it. I know that Steve Gibson, the chairman of Middlesbrough, wanted to produce a team that played in the Premier League entirely consist of players that were either through the academy or local kids. It didn't really go to plan. But that's pretty scary, isn't it?
It is, and it also shows how difficult it is to actually do it. You know, one thing, you know, I heard that, you know, you've been obviously at Middlesbrough, at Sunderland, they love their own homegrown players and they carry them through the system like heroes and want them so much to succeed. But to actually build the whole foundation on those players and be competitive, it's near impossible. So you got to take the hat up for Athletic Bilbao and what they've done and finally getting that trophy, which is fantastic.
You know, the thing about it is I think of Athletic Club Bilbao and all I think about is amazement and like respect, and I want to go to a game, and I got friends in there, like I said before, so I really desperately want to go because it's so well supported, and I think it's something that is a little bit missed in football, lost in football these days with all the money, with all the investors and everything else. But to do what they've done is remarkable, and congratulations to Atletico Bilbao. That's phenomenal. Let's move on to Manchester United against Liverpool. It was obviously, it's a massive derby. There's there's a lot always riding on these games. The rivalry between the two clubs is very well known. And of course, Liverpool were trying to get back to the top of the table. Guys, what a game. Phil, I mean, it was just chaotic. It was end to end. Liverpool should have been up 3-4-0 at halftime, but they weren't.
I think wild is the adjective I would use to describe this game. And not just in the way that after games, people just go, whoa, that was wild. But there was really just a sense of wild chaos from both sides. Manchester United organisationally are all over the shop. They don't seem to have any kind of idea structurally where they should be, how they should set up. They've got some really good players, but they don't seem to be positioned correctly on the pitch many times. And Liverpool, they didn't have the ability to rein in their emotions. I think they just got the better of them. The situation got the better of them, because in a different situation and maybe with, I don't know if different players or players who understood things a bit better, they would be 3 or 4 nil up, because we're not just talking about people missing chances. I think we're talking about people taking the wrong decisions in really good positions. And it just felt like it needed someone to calm things down from Liverpool. There seemed to be a bit of a desperation from them. And that is, there's a thin line between the intensity with which Liverpool play and letting it just sort of boil over into losing their heads a little bit, desperation, not having the calmness when they really needed to. The first half was so one-sided, so ludicrously one-sided. They had 15 shots and Manchester United didn't have a single shot. And there were good quality chances as well. They really should have been at least 3-0 up. And it just felt like, yeah, they were lacking that clinical edge. And it wasn't just because players were missing. It was because I just felt the emotional sense was overwhelming for Liverpool. I don't know. It just felt like it got to them. This was a game they really should have won. And I think Manchester City or Arsenal would have won this game had they been in that kind of dominating position. But Liverpool just couldn't get over the line. I'm not sure.
I must say, Phil, I don't quite agree with you that it was so one-sided. I know the stats actually say, you know, that United didn't have a shot on target or didn't even have a shot. But looking at it, I actually think that they came out, you know, they had that disallowed goal in, what, the first 2 minutes. You know, the header across goal from Casemiro. I don't know why Rashford or Højlund or anyone wasn't there to just poke it in. So I still think they created things. Liverpool, I thought, had a slow start. They had the same start against Sheffield United. They should have been one or two up before they woke up. And I think that's becoming a bit of a problem for Liverpool. I think they're letting teams in early and then they start to gather momentum. Yes, like they had plenty of chances. Now, you know, we can go through like Szoboszlai, you know, his couple of chances. You know, I think Onana actually played well. You know, we got to give him some credit. He made a fantastic early save that could have probably opened the gates for Liverpool. But yeah, there's surely a lot of problems at Man United. I don't know what they're trying to do, because they're trying to create space, but they're also allowing the opposition, you know, abundance of space as well. You know, I don't quite know what they're trying to achieve. They want to be a transition side. But you got to be solid and you got to have a rest defense that's covering players. You know, for all the credit that Mino is getting, I think defensively he has a lot of work to do. I think he's just tracking back is not the best. Same with Fernandes. And it creates problems for them. And that's why they, you know, you know, they concede so many chances. But it makes for an interesting game for sure. And we saw that against Chelsea as well.
I think Maino is an interesting one, right? So his finish was absolutely sublime, world-class,
unbelievable, phenomenal.
Unbelievable. I get what you're saying. You said he doesn't track back a lot. Fernandes doesn't track back a lot. There's a few. Casemiro's hasn't got the legs necessarily to get back as much. So why would Maino do it? Unless there's a demand for him to do it, right? He's looking around him going, well, He doesn't. I can do what I'll do. I'll play to my strengths and the rest will be.
But that's
right?
Where the coaching comes in. That's where Absolutely. The coaching comes in. That's where you need someone to bang on the door and tell him. And for me, that I don't know if Ten Hag is too nice or what's going on, but people seem to get away with, you know, a lot of things that they shouldn't.
You know what is an interesting stat though? I saw an interesting stat before the game. So it doesn't include yesterday's game. But Erik ten Hag has a win ratio at Old Trafford of 71.7%. That is the best win ratio of any permanent Red Devils manager in the club's history. That's actually ahead of Sir Alex Ferguson on 71.2%.
Yeah. Over 26 years compared to...
No, 100%. Yeah. You're right. But in terms of the criticism that's leveled at ten Hag and where United are, that just... I was really surprised by that stat.
I guess it's the way that they've won quite a lot of those games as well has been sort of desperate last minute comebacks and not necessarily dominating and getting in front and seeing out games comfortably, which is what people were used to them doing under under Sir Alex Ferguson. But yeah, I mean, you know, statistics can sort of be molded and waved into things.
We know that, don't we? Don't even bring it up, right? Don't even go there. Don't even talk. Don't even mention his name.
he must not be mentioned. But yeah, listen, United are a mess. And the problem is, we don't know where they're going to go from here. They're going to press the reset button again in the summer. Is Erik ten Hag going in the summer? Is winning the FA Cup enough for him to keep his job? Should he keep his job? Do they need to bring in a different manager and then subsequently bring in new players for him? Because they have bought players that Erik ten Hag wants, but it's not working. So it just feels like the season is kind of just drifting for Manchester United. I know they've still got the FA Cup and they should get to the final, but they will probably not win the FA Cup because Manchester City will probably win the FA Cup as well. And it just feels like another season of, it's not even transition, it's just like nothingness from Manchester United. A few moments of excitement with late winners and a few big performances, you know, in the FA Cup, and you know, getting something out of this game, I thought was quite impressive from them, given how badly I thought that they played. But that's not enough. Like, how many times on the podcast have we said, you know, is this going to be a turnaround for Manchester United? Well, now there's only, you know, 8 games left, and we're not talking about that. We're talking about just them drifting towards the end of the season with almost nothing to play for. They're not going to get top four. They might get to the FA Cup final, but that's, you know, it's not really enough for Manchester United.
I agree. I think they played a highly entertaining game. They were involved in a very highly entertaining game. I thought end product just wasn't enough. Chances created wasn't enough. They were okay in the first 10 minutes or so. And that's mainly because Liverpool, like Thomas said there, yeah, well, like you said, was quite slow to start, right? So I think it was a pretty average performance from Man United. I mean, the goal from Fernandes was a unbelievably well-taken goal, but it was a mistake from Liverpool. But you've got to take your chances. They did that. And we said that before, Manu's goal was exceptional. It's the goal of the game. Liverpool, I find it hard to think that Liverpool can go through another game like that and miss as many chances as they had. I mean, they had 28 shots on goal yesterday. They've had 62 shots against Manchester United in 2 games, right? Yeah. So in the 2 Premier League games they've played this season. Funny enough, both those Premier League games have ended up in draws. The first one was 0-0 and this one obviously was 2-2. And the game they did beat them in this year, Manchester United beat Liverpool 4-3, which again was another very hectic game. Bad defending in the FA Cup. So there's still a lot going on with Manchester United. But the thing I want to ask is, will Liverpool rue missing those chances and not winning the game against United, Thomas? Because, you know, it puts them back on level pegging. They haven't got their necks ahead anymore. And that makes all the difference, right?
You know what? We know it's going to be tied all the way to the end. And every slip, you know, Arsenal, you know, they're flying, keeping clean sheets. And I, you know, again, I watched the whole game against Sheffield United, and it's just not convincing. You know, they are creating chances, but for some reason, Phil, you touched on it, the composure, the wrong decisions, you know, and there are just too many things that, you know, that it's not just a single game where we can say, ah, today they were a bit off. It's been a consistent thing over the last, you know, 2 or 3 months where they've gone behind and they'd had to claw their way back and just barely made it. And it catches up with you. And I think in this game against, you know, Quansah, I think he played actually a fantastic game, but he makes a mistake, you know, it costs them a goal. And then, you know, they're chasing.
I don't know if you heard Klopp speaking after the game, and he was asked, you know, where does this leave the title race now? And he just sort of smiles and goes, game on. You can just tell, like, he is loving it because it is incredible to be involved in something historic like this. I mean, we're, you know, your ex-pros, I'm a fan, watching on, and we've never seen anything like this. And it is incredible. It's giving us plenty to talk about every week. And every game you sit down, you do not know what's going to happen. There's so much riding on every game. So yeah, it is as a spectacle, as a title race, it is historically brilliant and exciting. And it's great for everybody to be able to watch. But then if you're fans of the teams involved, then it's a bit harder to watch, I think.
It's so close, right? 3 games to go. Three teams in the title race with 7 games to go. And we're going to talk about it every week pretty much. And we're going to asking the question every week almost, like, have you changed in any way in terms of who you think will win the league? Yeah. Phil, have you got anything?
Yeah, I might have changed a little bit this week, actually. I don't want to be too sort of jumping on a bandwagon. But yeah, what I saw from Liverpool, it worried me a little bit in terms of the lack of composure. And I just couldn't help thinking, if Manchester City were in this situation, I feel like they would have killed off an opponent, and Liverpool desperately should have killed off Manchester United, and they didn't. And that's what you need in these kind of games. So I know I'm contradicting myself, because I've been saying for the last few weeks, I think Liverpool are going to win. I thought the emotion of Klopp leaving was going to push them over the line and help them do it. But now I'm kind of thinking maybe that emotion is getting the better of them. Maybe I'm just reacting to one performance, but it did feel like actually Manchester City this weekend, comparing them as well to, I don't know, Crystal Palace is not the same as playing at Old Trafford, but City struggled a little bit in that game, and then boom, they went into champions mode and they absolutely blew apart Palace in the second half. So I don't know if Liverpool have got that gear. So going around the houses saying, yeah, maybe I've changed my mind, maybe City are going to win it.
I think you've joined the Liverpool brigade, mate, and you've let your emotions get the worse of you or the better of you, having thought that it may take you over the line. It's definitely going to take you over the line, but not necessarily for success. Thomas, have you changed your mind at all?
No, I'm still backing Man City all the way. I think, you know, you're just looking at like who they've got, I think they've got on paper, easiest run in. Arsenal, again, that'll be about managing their emotions as well. You know, the closer they get to it, you know, they've got Man U away, you know, they've got Spurs away, Chelsea at home, you know, Villa at home in the next one. You know, so there's a lot of challenges there, a lot of storylines. And as good as they look now, you know, I must say, over the last, you know, two months, they've by far looked like the best team, and you know, conceded 4 goals in 10 games, I think, or something like that. Crazy. But I still think they have to overcome that hurdle, which Man City have, and they've got that experience and that belief in those situations. And that's why I back them.
Yeah, look, Man City, even though Champions League, FA Cup, Premier League title race, that's what they do, right? And that's what they've been doing year after year, and they've got the squad to do it. Even without Edison in goal, Ortega, I think, has done really well, all things considered. Yeah, I still think Man City are the ones to beat. I think they are in a position where, yeah, they'd love to be out in front, but I think they're happy enough to be where they are. And I agree with you, Thomas, that looking at their remaining fixtures, there's no guarantees, but I feel that they're in the best position taking it forward. For so many other reasons, and that's more about to do with they've done it time and time again. Let's talk about, we haven't talked about this for a while, actually, relegation battle. I mean, there were some big stories on the weekend. Luton scoring a 90th-minute winner against Bournemouth. Sheffield United drawing in the, 93rd minute against Chelsea, which is not really a big surprise there in terms of Chelsea conceding and not winning a game they should be winning, even though they had 68% possession. They only had 6 attempts on goal all game, and Sheffield United actually had 11. So it talks you a lot about, talk about earlier on about stats and about how it all messes you everything up. It doesn't necessarily give you a true reflection of how the game is. Brentford, we've got to bring Brentford into the conversation, because even they're only 4 points ahead, as are Everton. And Palace are on 30. So there are teams there that can easily get drawn into that relegation fight. Everton, there is still a points deduction hanging over their head. That could change everything as well. And therefore, I'm going to say straight off the bat, Sheffield United are not out of it just quite yet. They're not far, but they're not out of it just yet.
They're down, man. They're down. Sheffield United?
They're not.
Okay, because of maybe the points deductions.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, maybe that could save them. But
That's what I'm saying. That's the only reason they're not out of it just yet, the points deductions. That's the only reason.
Okay, well, that's a variable that we don't really know what's going to happen. So that's the big asterisk, isn't it, and caveat for this relegation battle, because there have been points deductions. There's going to be appeals. There could be further deductions. There could be further appeals. So, yeah, it's difficult for us to make predictions with that hanging over us. But if we're going purely on footballing merit, then yeah, obviously Sheffield United and Burnley are both down. Okay, if we're talking about no further points deductions, they're both down. And Luton, I'm going to say Luton are going to stay up. Who's with me? You with me, Schwartzy?
Mate, they've got a really good chance. They really do. They've got fight, determination. They play some good football. Home.
They've got goals.
They've got goals.
I was looking at, they've scored as many goals as Manchester United. They scored 45 goals. They've got 15 different goal scorers in their squad this season, which is a huge number. And in a relegation battle, you know how important scoring goals is. So, yeah, I mean, look at their running as well. Their running is winnable. I mean, there's games against teams in and around the bottom six, which is going to be very, very important. But I think Luton can do it.
I must say, I'm a little bit with you, Swartz, on Sheffield United. I think they've still got a chance. But the next two games, yeah. The next two games, though, they've got Brentford away and Burnley at home. And I think if they can get 4 points from those two games, they are in there. Because I think I've seen enough. I think Wilder's actually, they're scoring. I think, you know, McBurney, I think Gustavo Hamer has been really good. And then Brereton, who's Brereton Diaz, who's come in.
Yeah.
I think they, you know, I was impressed with them at Liverpool because I thought they were just going to lie down and get slaughtered. And they actually took the game and should have got something out of that game. So the jury's still out for me. You know, I still give them a little bit of hope, and I hope that Luton stay up. I like it for Rob Edwards. I think, you know, he's a former teammate of mine at Aston Villa. You know, I think they show some character, and I love the way they go at it. Yeah, I think it all hinges on Everton and, you know, how many points they get deducted, or if they do. I think that could throw a spanner in the works.
Brentford. We've got to talk. I can't not talk about Brentford.
Thomas Frank, come on. Thomas Frank.
I mean, no win in
nine games. Never going down. Never going down.
Four draws, five losses. Look, great comeback in the end against Villa, right?
So amazing.
Great fight, great determination.
Yeah, against Man United.
Yeah. But they are kind of in free fall, right?
They're unbeaten in three games, Shorty.
They haven't won in nine, mate.
We can just twist the stats, can't we?
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, Thomas, start with you. Like, he's your mate, right? So, and I know you're going to be biased.
He's not my mate, but, you know, obviously want him to do well. You know,
yeah, but he's your mate, really is. He's a mate.
Okay, all right. Okay, he's my mate.
From a distance, he's your mate, right? He's got to be. I mean, I don't think he's under pressure in terms of his job. I can't see that happening with Brentford. Maybe the end of the season, they get relegated. You never know. But I don't think that's an issue. Is this the season now for Brentford?
You know, I still think they'll be okay. But, you know, again, there's some worrying signs. I think we saw, you know, Ivan Toney, obviously he's not there after this season. I can't see that. And there was a few things, you know, he started on the bench against Villa and, you know, just threw his arm out a little bit. So there are, you know, that rosy, you know, that we've seen over the last couple of years and that philosophy and the players they've brought in, I think, has sort of been crumbling a little bit. You know, I don't think the team in general, I think there's some good players. You know, obviously there's a few Danish players in there, but I think a few of them, you know, are not quite playing well enough. Yeah, they are good up front, but again, leaking too many goals and, not consistent enough. So, you know, they have to beat Sheffield United at the weekend. I think that's a massive, massive game, because if they don't get anything from that game, I think they'll be dragged in, definitely, because the fans will be uneasy and everything else. So that is a massive one.
They've played 32 games, so they've got six games remaining. Of those six, obviously three away, three at home. The three away are Sheffield United, Luton, which is the next one. Sheffield United is at home, sorry. Luton away, Everton away, and they've also got Bournemouth away, second last game of the season. I mean, they're massive, massive games for them. And they're teams that are in and around them and will be in and around them. So they're going to be playing four finals, really, between now and the end of the season, Phil. Can you see them staying up?
Yeah, I can see them staying up. And I also, by the way, I just want to give credit to Thomas there for giving a very, very unbiased answer when talking about the Premier League's only Danish manager with five Danish players in the squad. So it was very, very unbiased.
But he did give them a credible mention, right? He did say they got Danish players in the team as well.
Yes, but that
so
didn't count.
But also said they could play better. So.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. No, that was good. I wasn't expecting that. I think they're going to stay up because I think there's worse teams in the... in the fight, and also, you know, they do have an advantage. We're looking at it's a 4-point advantage, I think, over they 4 points clear of the drop. I think they're 4 points clear, which might not sound a lot, but we're talking about teams that haven't won that many games this season. So if they can win against Sheffield United at the weekend, which they actually lost, I think, earlier in the season at Bramall Lane. So if they win, I reckon that should be that for them, and that will definitely be it for Sheffield United, given what you guys were saying, that would put the nail in their coffin, I think, and we can have the conversation next week where you can admit you were wrong, and we can all move on. But no, I think Brentford will be okay. I think Luton are staying up, and I think Forest are going down.
So you think Forest are going down, Burnley and Sheffield United. Thomas, have you got any other different sort of variation on that?
Again, I think it all depends on Everton. They're just poor. There's a few bright spots. I think Brantwaite, he's great at the back, and Calvin Lewin, I think they obviously depend on him to be fit. But, you know, like this, you know, just the game this weekend, against Burnley, I just thought they were poor. It was just like walking through the desert in that first half and nothing happened. And see, it was only the second win in 112 days. So I fear for them. If they get a 3-4 points deduction, I think they'll be struggling. Even though, they'll be fighting and they'll be well organized, like they always are. But they're not scoring. They're not winning games, and that's a problem.
The problem is with the appeals potentially as well for these points deductions. Yeah. So we could get to the end of the season and then not necessarily know where we are.
Is it fair? Is it fair for all the other teams to be in this predicament, right? Not knowing exactly where they stand?
No, it's not. But it is what it is. It's very unfair. And I've had similar kind of situations in Spain as well in recent years with teams getting punished after the season has ended. So a couple of years ago, Elche finished 14th, but then got relegated after the season for financial irregularities. And Eibar stayed up, and Eibar's manager had already quit because he didn't keep them up, and he said he'd quit if they didn't keep them up. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not fair, but it does happen, and that is the big asterisk alongside this relegation battle.
Did he get reinstated?
No.
Oh well, probably missed out on his bonus as well. Can you imagine that? That'd be devastating, absolutely devastating. There is some talk I've read about the fact is they may change the rules so that there are no longer points deductions, it's more financial penalties. Do you guys agree with that, Phil? Do you think that's a better solution to it?
It depends what kind of financial penalties, because staying up in the Premier League is worth so much money that if it's not a huge financial penalty, then you're kind of, if not encouraging people to break the rules, but saying if you break the rules, you pay a little fine and you'll still stay in the Premier League. So yeah, it's a difficult one. Obviously, points deductions are what really hurt teams. But then after the season ends, it is difficult and complicated to then implement point deduction. So maybe it is the most logical solution, but maybe not the fairest.
I think you got to hit them where it hurts. I think, if you go the other way and say it's a financial penalty, then you might as well just open the gates and say, oh, do whatever you want. Because as you said, there'll be people more willing to take the chances because there's so much money in the Premier League. So no, I think if we have these rules, I think that there has to be sports punishments. There has to be points or whatever, that actually hurts you on the pitch instead of just in a boardroom.
The issue you have is, as the example is right now in Manchester City, it drags on and drags on and drags on. So at what point do they go back, And if they're talking about a couple of years ago in terms of these, where the alleged, infringements are, how do you go back? That, I think that's the biggest problem, right, with the points deduction. Do you end up going back a couple of seasons? You can strip them of titles, you can do all that, but the teams that have missed out because of it. So that's the whole thing, right?
The bottom line is just don't break the rules, guys. Stick to the rules.
But there's always going to be people going to be breaking them or manipulating them as best as they possibly can to be on the borderline, if that's the case. I think that's proven time and time again. It's always the way. I agree in principle. I think points deduction is the best way forward for it. And there's a bit of a precedent being set now with what's happened with Everton, what's happened with Nottingham Forest. So there's already kind of like a marker in the sand. I think it needs to continue like that. The issue is, like, again, like I said, if you come to an example like happening with Manchester City with 114 breaches supposedly, then there's a major issue because it's going to drag on for potentially years. So that's the only thing that worries me about it all. Let's talk about Wolves against VAR. I mean, they played West Ham on the weekend and lost 2-1, but it's seemingly, certainly the way it's been perceived, and certainly coming out at Wolves, is that it's Wolves v VAR. Let's get straight to the point. On the weekend, Kilman's goal, it was disallowed for a player being right in front of Fabianski and obscuring his view. I'm going to go show off the bat. I think it's the correct decision. Lucas Fabianski, as the ball's being headed by Kilman, he can't see it. So I'm not saying he's going to save it, but he's given no chance to save it because he's got a player right on his toes, right in front of him. And it was Tawanda Chirawa, if that's how I spell it, pronounced it correctly. If not, I apologize. Was standing right in his way as Kilman heads the ball. So for me, the way the rules are, it's offside.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you, Swartz. I think, you know, one thing is...
Oh, like, surprise, the two goalkeepers. Yeah, the two goalkeepers sticking with the goalkeeper.
Well, maybe because we have a better understanding of what it's like to stand there and have someone stand right in front of you and obscure your view when someone heads the ball. And
goalkeepers usually. You know, what is
but
this?
But it's in the rules. The rule says that if you are interfering with a player, blocking the view of a player that you know, hinders him in, you know, either playing the ball or trying to play the ball, which obviously a goalkeeper, that's saving the ball. And he clearly is. And so, you know, it doesn't matter. People are trying to bend him to say, but he wouldn't have saved it. It doesn't matter. The rules
he's given no chance
about that. And it's I get, you know, in the past, and people are sort of referring to what they in their mind think should happen. But the rules are quite clear in this instance. So I don't know why everyone is discussing it. Yeah, we can agree if it's right or wrong, the rule. But the rule is clear, and it was offside.
Well, let's hear what Gary O'Neill had to say about it firstly.
My view, David Moyes' view, Fabianski's view, is that it's a scandalous decision. Terrible, horrendous. I don't understand it. So can't think of an explanation, to be honest. It's one of the worst decisions I've ever witnessed.
Have you had an explanation from the match officials?
No. I wasn't calm enough when I went in there to receive one. So, it's just... No, he hasn't really got one, so he's. I don't know where they are with it at this moment, and any explanation doesn't help us. So, terrible decision. And I'll tell you why it's a terrible decision, because the only way he could be impacting the goalkeeper is if he impacts how he can move, which he isn't, and if he impacts his vision, which he isn't. Because if you watch the side-on view, Fabianski can clearly see the ball over Tawanda's head. So, terrible decision.
The worst decision that he has ever seen. That can only be offside if it stops Fabianski's ability to move or impedes his vision. Well, that's, you've just said exactly what happened. It stops Fabianski's ability to move, and it certainly impedes his vision. So he's answered his own question there. It's clear to me. Look, I play with Gary O'Neill as a player, and he objected to every decision. Every decision on the training field, every bit of extra work we had to do, any type of session we had to do, he was objecting to it. I just think the problem I find with this is that they're trying to force people in a position where they're making comments like that, statements like that, that if you can't agree with his, you're an idiot almost. You know, you don't know the game, you don't know the rules. And I think that's really poor from a manager to take that position. I think it's a really silly one to follow. Yes, there's been other decisions throughout the course of the season where you could say definitely there are questionable decisions being made. But I think every team throughout the course of the season have had questionable decisions go against them in VAR, because there is still an area of interpretation for VAR, which people are always crying out and saying, there's no interpretation anymore. Referees don't have the chance to interpret. When they do, people get upset. In the example of Gary O'Neill.
I was being silly when I was teasing you earlier on, just why did you up? Because I think this is, I completely agree with you. This is a very clear offside. And I'd heard the Gary O'Neill snippet before I'd actually seen it. So I thought, oh God, what's gone on here? This sounds like the robbery of the century. And then I saw the clip of the goal. I was like, what are you talking about, mate? It's clearly offside. Like, you can't just, it's not up to interpretation. He is offside. He's in front of the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper is being impeded. No, he wouldn't have saved the header, but that is completely not the point. The point is that the player was offside in front of the goalkeeper. Sorry, mate, you might not like it, but that is, it's not even really down to interpretation. It's just the rules.
Yeah, he's gone on the wrong one. He's jumped on the wrong one. He should not have carried on with this one because I think he's completely wrong on it. I think, I don't care. Like, I mean,
worst decision he's ever seen.
I actually think, you know, if he's going to complain about something, you would complain about the Ward-Prowse corner because, yes, you know, in my view, there's not a free kick on the keeper, but, you know, Antonio is muscling. He is using his body. You know, I think that's the one you can sort of say, okay, you know, if you're really lucky, you might get something there. So, you know, this one is clear. Like, the only discussion he can open up with this one is that, is it something that we should look at changing in the future?
A lot of people disagree with us, by the way, lads. A lot of people think that Wolves were absolutely robbed, and not just Wolves fans. So maybe we don't know. Maybe, you know, the two Premier League goalkeepers with nearly 1,000 Premier League appearances between them don't actually know that
but,
much.
But I also think it's a bit of bandwagon, right? Because people, I think the whole world in terms of VAR are very split, right? So there are a lot of people who are anti it, right? And always the people who are anti it are the loudest voices. And I think the fact that people are so anti it, until such time it affects them. So if they don't have a decision, and then all of a sudden, if VAR don't see something that has happened, people get upset about it. So that's why VAR is there. If a referee's missed it, a linesman's missed it, and VAR don't pick up on it, then there's outrage as well, right? Because that's what VAR is there for. So I just feel that VAR's not going anywhere. Accept it. It needs to improve 100%. But it's, for me, look, and this is where the interpretation comes into it, right? But I think in this regard, there is an interpretation because it is actually the rules, like Thomas said. It states in the rules, he impedes Fabianski's view. He's right in front of him. Slow it down, pause it. When Kilman heads the ball, he's standing right in the line of Fabianski. So for me, it's a no-brainer. It is offside.
Yeah, and all the arguments you hear, I heard Dion Dublin said, yeah, but if I was the goalkeeper, I would move so I could actually see the ball. You know, so it's all but, sort of.
But that's why that's why he was never a goalkeeper, right? Because he doesn't know how a goalkeeper stands, what he does, how he positions, and all that. And it's otherwise what will happen is every week, and Dion did it as well, they'll just go and stand in front of the goalkeeper and block you, like you did against Stoke, right? You guys knew exactly what to do again in Stoke, right? You would stand in front of the goalkeeper and block them.
Yeah.
If people think that's fine, or you know, he wasn't impeding his view, or the goalkeeper needs to move, they'll do it every week, and it will become literally a free for all. So, bottom line is: have Wolves been more affected by VAR decisions this season, more so than any other team in the league?
I don't know, mate. I mean, every team has got moments where they feel that they've been hard done by with VAR, and it's very difficult. I don't know if in England they have the Premier League table without VAR, because in Spain they've got a La Liga table without VAR interventions to show who would be top of the table without VAR interventions, which is something that people like to use to try and make whatever point they're making. But no, I don't know. I think every team has got moments where they feel that they've been hard done by. So I wouldn't say that Wolves have been more dumb hardly than, you know, than other teams. But I guess when a few things accumulate, and you can see why Gary O'Neill's sort of gone off like that, because they have had some decisions recently which have gone against them. But for them to feel like they have been singled out, or that it's cyclical, it goes round, it evens itself out. So if you get a decision that goes against you, you will get one that goes for you as well. So I don't think they've been more harshly treated than anyone else. No.
No, and it's not about shouting the loudest. you know, definitely not in this instance. You know, and some teams, you know, make a meal out of it and you know, make a big point all the time, and you see certain managers, and others, know that it's part of the game and it'll go against you. And sometimes you get the benefit of the doubt, and you know, that's the way it is. As to what you said, it is there to stay. So we might as well accept it.
So the chairman of Wolves, they released a statement after the game, Jeff Shee, and he says, when a goal is scored and not one person inside the stadium questions the validity of the goal, including both sets of players, coaches, fans, and even the match officials themselves, it's time to question whether someone remotely disallowing the goal is really what football wants or needs.
Oh my God. So should we just put a poll out and after every goal and just say, whoever agrees with this? I can't believe that you got highly educated football people coming out and saying this. This is the most disturbing thing for me, is that it's so clear and still you got people saying these things. You know, there's a lot of other things we can discuss and where we can disagree and not, you know, but this one, I'm perplexed.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I think when you start to try and listen to people in the stadium and then even sets of fans and players on the pitch at the time, often, yes, you can gauge reaction. You can gauge an incident on a pitch by players' reactions, but that's not always the case because it's the moment. There's so much going on in a melee and you don't realize it, right? And I think the officials there on VAR, whether they're in the stadium or not, it's actually better they're not in the stadium. They have a chance to be quiet in a location and make an educated and a controlled decision with other people involved as well. So it's not just one person. There's generally someone standing over their shoulder as well, or there's two people involved in that decision making. So I don't have a problem with it. I think, like we said, I think it's the right decision, and they just need to get on with it.
I'm just looking at the La Liga table without VAR, because like I said, it is a big thing here. People update it every single week. And Real Madrid would still be top of the table without VAR, 7 points clear of Barcelona, Girona third, Atletico Madrid fourth. So basically exactly the same without VAR, more or less. So yeah, maybe we're getting a bit too carried away with our complaints.
All right, so let's move on to, I want to ask both of you, what games should Opta Sports viewers be most looking forward to next weekend? Phil, you can go with La Liga. What game, if we're there and we want to watch on Opta Sport next weekend, who would you say, as they've got one game to pick from, what game would you say people have to watch or should watch and why?
I would highly recommend watching Atletico Madrid against Girona.
I knew you were going to say that. I should have said it beforehand. Go on.
Well, it's the obvious choice, Swansea. It's third against fourth. If Girona win in Madrid, they will pretty much wrap up Champions League football, which would be absolutely historic. Atletico themselves really need a victory to try and maintain fourth spot. They've got an incredible record at home. Atletico, they've only lost to Barcelona at home in the last year and a half. Girona beat Atleti 4-3. When they played earlier on this season, it was one of the games of the season. And as regular listeners to the podcast will know, Girona tend to play quite attractive football. And I recommend watching their games almost every week, because there's been a few nil-nils there in recent weeks. But generally speaking, they're a very attractive side to watch. And also, it's a good time as well. It's the early game on Saturday here in Spain. So it's a late night Saturday football for you in Australia. And yeah, I definitely recommend Atletico Girona.
Thomas, what you got for us in the Premier League?
Oh, you know, we can't not have a bit of Ange ball on a Saturday night at 9:30. I think that game is massive for Tottenham going to Newcastle. You know, again, they've got that game in hand. Aston Villa going to Arsenal. So if Tottenham can get a point or 3 points in this one, they're in a great position. And again, it's always fantastic at St. James's Park. I'm sure there'll be goals in this one for sure. You know, Newcastle had that fantastic comeback against West Ham. So I think, you know, who doesn't want to see a bit of Ange ball on a Saturday night? So bring it on.
Well, I'm going to go with Arsenal against Aston Villa. So, yeah. So it's very much the same reason.
One.
Yeah, well, Arsenal obviously trying to maintain that push for the Premier League title, top of the table, and obviously Aston Villa, who so desperately need to win the game to apply pressure on Tottenham to try and finish that top four position. Unai Emery back at Arsenal at the Emirates is always a good thing to see, and I think be interested to see what sort of reception he gets, but I think it's going to be a fascinating game. I think Arsenal are absolutely on fire and Villa are licking their wounds a little bit after dropping points against Brentford. So I think it's a game that one should really look out for. And I think, yes, Newcastle-Tottenham's exciting and it's a perfect time to go and watch it. But if you want to watch both, watch Newcastle-Tottenham, have a bit of a break, and then go
and watch salesman.
Arsenal-Villa. Yeah, because I think they're big, big games. Look, I think all across the board, you look, there's so many reasons to watch different games for various reasons in positions on the table, relegation fights, European places. Yeah, it's exciting stuff. It always is coming to the end of the season, and the fact they've got three teams that can still win the Premier League title, I think, makes it all the better. Well, guys, that's all we've got time for this week. Remember, Optus Sport is the only place to watch this Premier League title.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Title race and relegation battle. There's also La Liga and WSL back next week too. So see you next time, guys.